Chapter 17. Our Home. Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. Psalm 90, 1. There are two reasons why this text should ring in our hearts with special power. It is the first verse of a deeply solemn psalm, the first bar of a wondrous piece of spiritual music. I don't know how others feel when they read the 90th psalm, but it always makes me lean back in my chair and think. For one thing, this 90th psalm is the only psalm composed by Moses, the man of God. It expresses that holy man's feelings as he saw the whole generation whom he had led forth from Egypt dying in the wilderness. Year after year, he saw that fearful judgment being fulfilled that Israel brought on itself by unbelief. Your corpses will fall in this wilderness, even all your numbered men, according to your complete number from 20 years old and upward, who have grumbled against me. Numbers 14:29. One after another, he saw the heads of the families whom he had led forth from Egypt lay down their bones in the desert. For 40 long years he saw the strong, the swift, the wise, the tender, and the beautiful, who had crossed the Red Sea with him in triumph, cut down and wither like grass. For 40 years he saw his companions continually changing, consuming, and passing away. Who can wonder that he should say, Lord, you have been our dwelling place? We are all pilgrims and strangers upon earth, and there is none who will remain here long. Lord, you are our home. For another thing, the 90th psalm forms part of the burial service of the Church of England. Whatever fault people may find with the prayer book, I don't think that anyone can deny the remarkable beauty of the burial service. Beautiful are the texts that it puts into the minister's mouth as he meets the coffin at the churchyard gate and leads the mourners into God's house. Beautiful is the chapter from the first epistle to the Corinthians about the resurrection of the body. Beautiful are the sentences and prayers appointed to be read as the body is laid in its long home. But to my mind, especially beautiful are the psalms that are selected for reading when the mourners have just taken their places in church. I know nothing that sounds so soothing, solemnizing, heart-touching, and moving to man's spirit at that trying moment as the wondrous utterance of the old inspired lawgiver, Lord, you have been our dwelling place. Lord, you are our home. I want to draw from these words two thoughts that may do the readers and listeners of this chapter some good. An English home is famous all over the world for its happiness and comfort. It's a little bit of heaven left upon earth. Yet even an English home is not forever. The family nest is sure to be taken down, and its inhabitants are sure to be scattered. Bear with me for a few short minutes while I try to set before you the best, truest, and happiest home. 1. The first thought that I will offer you is this. I will show you what the world is. I freely acknowledge that it is a beautiful world in many respects. Its seas and rivers, its sunrises and sunsets, its mountains and valleys, its harvests and its forests, its fruits and its flowers, and its days and its nights are all beautiful in their way. That heart must be cold and unfeeling that never finds a day in the year when it can admire anything in nature. But as beautiful as the world is, there are many things in it to remind us that it is not home. It is an inn, a tent, a tabernacle, a lodging, and a training school. But it is not home. It is a changing world. Everyone around us is continually moving, changing, and passing away. Families, properties, landlords, tenants, farmers, laborers, and tradesmen are all continually on the move. To find the same name in the same dwelling for 3 generations running is so uncommon that it is the exception rather than the rule. A world so full of change cannot be called home. It is a trying and disappointing world. What person ever lives to be 50 years old and does not find to his detriment that it is so? There are trials in married life and trials in single life. trials in children and trials in brothers and sisters, trials in money matters and trials in health. How many trials there are! Their name is Legion, for they are many. Mark 5:9, and not the tenth part of them perhaps ever comes to light. Few indeed are the families that do not have hidden sorrows and troubles. A world so full of trial and disappointment cannot be called home. It is a dying world. Death is continually around us and near us and meets us at every turn. Few are the family gatherings when Christmas comes around in which there are not some empty chairs and vacant places. Few are the men and women past 30 who could not number a long list of names deeply cut forever in their hearts, but names of beloved ones now dead and gone. Where are our fathers and mothers? Where are our ministers and teachers? Where are our brothers and sisters? Where are our husbands and wives? Where are our neighbors and friends? Where are the old grey-headed worshippers whose reverent faces we remember so well when we first went to God's house? Where are the boys and girls we played with when we went to school? How many must reply, dead, dead, dead? The daisies are growing over their graves, and we are left alone. Surely a world so full of death can never be called home. It is a scattering and dividing world. Families are continually breaking up and going in different directions. How rarely do the members of a family ever meet together again after the surviving parent is laid in the grave? The band of union seems snapped, and nothing unites it again. The cement seems withdrawn from the parts of the building, and the whole principle of cohesion is lost. How often some miserable disagreement about an insignificant thing, or some wretched argument about money, makes a breach that is never healed, and, like a crack in china, though riveted, can never be quite cured. Rarely indeed do those who played in the same nursery lie down in time in the same churchyard or keep peace with one another until they die. A world so full of division can never be called home. These are ancient things. It's useless to be surprised at them. They are the bitter fruit of sin and the sorrowful consequence of the fall. Change, trial, death, and division all entered into the world when Adam and Eve transgressed. We must not murmur. We must not fret. We must not complain. We must accept the situation in which we find ourselves. We must each do our best to lighten the sorrows and increase the comforts of our position. We must steadily resolve to make the best of everybody and everything around us. However, we must never, never, never forget that the world is not home. Are you young? Does everything around and before you seem bright and cheerful and happy? Do you secretly think in your own mind that I take too dreary a view of the world? Take care. You will not say so in a little while. Be wise early. Learn to moderate your expectations. Depend on it that the less you expect from people and things here below, the happier you will be. Are you prosperous in the world? Have death, sickness, disappointment, poverty, and family troubles passed over your door up to this time and did not come in? Are you secretly saying to yourself, "Nothing can hurt me much. I'll die quietly in my bed and will see no sorrow"? Take care. You are not yet in the harbour. A sudden storm of unexpected trouble may make you change your tune. Don't set your affection on things below. Hold them with a very loose hand and be ready to surrender them at a moment's notice. Use your prosperity well while you have it, but don't lean all your weight on it lest it break suddenly and pierce your hand. See 2 Kings 18:21 and Isaiah 36:6. Do you have a happy home? Are you going to spend Christmas around a family hearth where sickness, death, poverty, partings and quarrelings have never yet been seen? Be thankful for it. Oh, be thankful for it. A really happy Christian home is the nearest thing to heaven on earth. But take care, for this state of things will not last forever. It must have an end, and if you are wise, you will never forget Paul's words. The time has been shortened, so that from now on those who have wives should be as though they had none, and those who weep as though they did not weep, and those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice, and those who buy as though they did not possess, and those who use the world as though they did not make full use of it. For the form of this world is passing away. 1 Corinthians 7:29-31. 2. The second thought that I will offer you is this. I will show you what Christ is, even in this life, to true Christians. Beyond doubt, heaven is the final home in which a true Christian will dwell at last. He is daily traveling toward that. He is daily moving nearer to that. We know that if the earthly tent, which is our house, is torn down, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. 2 Corinthians 5:1. With body and soul united once more, renewed, beautified, and perfected, we will live forever in the Father's great house in heaven. To that home we have not yet come. We are not yet in heaven. Is there, meanwhile, no home for our souls? Is there no spiritual dwelling place to which we may continually go in this desolate world, and, going there, find rest and peace? Thank God that there is no difficulty in finding an answer to that question. There is a home provided for all laboring and heavy-laden souls, and that home is Christ. To know Christ by faith, to live the life of faith in Him, to abide in Him daily by faith, to flee to Him in every storm of conscience, to use Him as our refuge in every day of trouble, to utilize Him as our priest, confessor, absolver, and spiritual director every morning and evening in our lives, this is to be at home spiritually, even before we die. To all sinners who by faith use Christ in this way, Christ is in the highest sense a dwelling place. They can truthfully say, we are pilgrims and strangers on earth, yet we have a home. Of all the symbols and figures under which Christ is set before us, I know few that are more heartwarming and comforting than the one now before us. Home is one of the sweetest, tenderest words in the English language. Home is the place with which our pleasantest thoughts are closely bound up. All that the best and happiest home is to its inhabitants, that Christ is to the soul that believes on Him. In the midst of a dying, changing, disappointing world, a true Christian always has something that no power on earth can take away. Morning, noon, and night, he has near him a living refuge, a living home for his soul. You may rob him of life, liberty, and money. You may take from him health, lands, house, and friends. But no matter what you do, you cannot rob him of his home. Like those humblest of God's creatures that carry their shells on their backs wherever they are, so the Christian, wherever he goes, carries his home. There is no home like Christ. In him there is room for all and room for all kinds. None are unwelcome guests and visitors, and none are refused admission. The door is always open. It is never locked. The best robe, the fatted calf, the ring, and the shoes are always ready for all who come. It doesn't matter if in time past you have been the vilest of the vile, a slave of sin, an enemy of all righteousness, a Pharisee of Pharisees, a Sadducee of Sadducees, or a publican of publicans. There is still hope. All may be pardoned, forgiven, and forgotten. There is a home and refuge where your soul may be admitted this very day. That home is Christ. Come to me, he says, Matthew 11:28. Knock, and it will be opened to you. Matthew 7:7. There is no home like Christ. In him there is limitless and unwearied mercy for all, even after admission. None are rejected and cast forth again after a trial period because they are too weak and bad to stay. No, those whom he receives he always keeps. Where he begins, there he makes a good end. Those whom he admits he at once fully justifies. Those whom he justifies, he also sanctifies. Those whom he sanctifies, he also glorifies. Romans 8:29-30. No hopeless characters are ever sent away from his house. No men or women are ever found too bad to heal and renew. He made the world out of nothing, and nothing is too difficult for him to do. He who is himself the home has said it, and will stand by it. The one who comes to me I will certainly not cast out. John 6:37. There is no home like Christ. In him there is unvarying kindness, patience, and gentle dealing for all. He is not heavy-handed, but is gentle and humble in heart. Matthew 11:29. None who go to him are ever treated roughly or made to feel that their company is not welcome. A feast of rich things is always provided for them. The Holy Spirit is placed in their hearts and dwells in them as in a temple. Leading, guiding, and instruction are daily provided for them. If they err, they are brought back into the right way. If they fall, they are raised again. If they transgress willfully, they are corrected to make them better. However, the rule of the whole house is love. There is no home like Christ. In him there is no change. He loves all who come to him from youth to old age and is never tired of doing good to them. Earthly homes are full of volatility and uncertainty. Favor is deceitful. Courtesy and civility are often on people's lips, while inwardly they are weary of your company and wish you were gone. You seldom know how long your presence is welcome or to what extent your friends really care to see you. But it's not so with Christ. He is the same yesterday and today and forever. Hebrews 13:8. There is no home like Christ. Once you begin to commune with him, it will never be broken off. Once you are joined to the Lord by faith, you are joined to him for an endless eternity. Earthly homes always come to an end, sooner or later. The dear old furniture is sold and dispersed. The dear old heads of the family are gathered to their fathers. The dear old nest is pulled to pieces. But it's not so with Christ. Faith will eventually be swallowed up in sight. Hope will eventually be changed into certainty. We will see one day with our eyes and will no longer need to believe. We will be moved from the lower chamber to the upper, and from the outer court to the Holy of Holies. But once in Christ, we will never be out of Christ. Once our name is placed in the Lamb's Book of Life, we belong to a home that will continue forever. Now, before I conclude, let me ask every reader or listener of this chapter a plain question. Do you have a home for your soul? Is it safe? Is it pardoned? Is it justified? Is it prepared to meet God? With all my heart, I wish you a happy home, but remember my question. Amid the greetings and salutations of home, amid the meetings and partings, amid the laughter and fun, amid the joys and sympathies and affections, think of my question, do you have a home for your soul? Our earthly homes will soon be closed forever. Time hastens on with giant strides. Old age and death will be upon us before many years have passed away. Oh, seek an abiding home for the better part of you, the part that never dies. Before it's too late, seek a home for your soul. Seek Christ so that you may be safe. Woe to the person who is found outside the ark when the flood of God's wrath bursts at last on a sinful world. Seek Christ so that you may be happy. None have a real right to be cheerful, merry, light-hearted, and at ease except those who have got a home for their souls. Once more, I say, seek Christ without delay. If Christ is the home of your soul, accept a friendly caution. Beware of being ashamed of your home in any place or company. The person who is ashamed of the home where he was born, the parents who brought him up when a baby, and the brothers and sisters who played with him, that person, as a general rule, may be considered a mean and despicable being. But what will we say of the person who is ashamed of him who died for him on the cross? What will we say of the person who is ashamed of his Christianity, ashamed of his master, and ashamed of his home? Take care that you are not that person. No matter what others around you think, never be ashamed of being a Christian. Let them laugh, mock, jest, and ridicule if they will. They will not scoff in the hour of death and in the day of judgment. Raise your flag, show your colors, nail them to the mast. You may well be ashamed of drinking, gambling, lying, swearing, idleness, and pride, but you have no reason at all to be ashamed of Bible reading, praying, and belonging to Christ. Let those laugh who will laugh. A good soldier is never ashamed of his leader's colors and his uniform. Take care that you are never ashamed of your master. Never be ashamed of your home. If Christ is the home of your soul, accept a piece of friendly advice. Let nothing tempt you to stray away from home. The world and the devil will often try hard to make you drop your religion for a little while and walk with them. Your own flesh will whisper that there's no danger in going a little way with them and that it cannot do you much harm. Take care, I say, take care when you are tempted in this way. Take care of looking back like Lot's wife. Genesis 19:26. Do not forsake your home. There are undoubtedly pleasures in sin, but they're not real and satisfactory. There is, beyond question, an excitement and short-lived enjoyment in the world's ways, but it is joy that leaves a bitter taste behind it. Wisdom's ways alone are pleasant, and wisdom's paths alone are paths of peace. Proverbs 3:17. Cling to them strictly, and do not turn aside. Follow the Lamb wherever he goes. Stick to Christ and his rule through evil report and good report. The longer you live, the happier you will find his service, and the more ready you will be to sing in the highest sense, "There is no place like home." If Christ is the home of your soul, accept a hint about your duty. Be sure to take every opportunity of telling others about your happiness. Tell them that you have a happy home. Tell them, if they will hear you, that you find Christ to be a good master and Christ's service a happy service. Tell them that his yoke is easy and his burden is light. Matthew 11:30. Tell them that no matter what the devil may say, the rules of your home are not burdensome, and that your master pays far better wages than the world does. Try to do a little good wherever you are. Try to enlist more inhabitants for your happy home. Say to your friends and relatives, if they will listen, as Moses did of old, "Come with us, and we will do you good, for the Lord has promised good concerning Israel." Numbers 10:29.